Welcome to Talking to Grandma, a weekly podcast that elevates stories, science, and strategies to help you raise and teach multilingual and bilingual children. I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides, founder and CEO of Bilingual Generation, an organization that helps children with bilingualism in their bones stay connected to their heritage languages and cultures. I'm also a Harvard-educated doctora who has experienced losing, recovering, and passing on my heritage language to my children. Whether you are a parent, grandparent, teacher, researcher, school leader, or simply someone interested in the topics of language learning and language preservation, this podcast is for you. Through interviews with amazing guests and solo episodes, you will find the resources, guidance, and strategies needed to support you in your journey. Let's get started.
Hello, I'm Beck, the producer of Talking to Grandma. Today you're going to hear from Jennifer Velasquez and explore the vital connection between culture, language, and wellness.
I believe that in order for us to meaningfully engage with a product or a tool or a service, that has to be designed with our specific needs in mind. It has to be relevant. It has to feel like it's made for us. And the wellness space was not, right? It was lemon water. And when you said it had any type of culture, it was yoga. It was traditional Chinese medicine. It was, and not in a way where people were honoring the teachers, the ancestors.
Jennifer Velasquez is an illustrator and the founder of Almade, a wellness company that provides BIPOC women with the tools to heal their inner child and break free from their generational curses. Using her background in adult education and love of neuroscience, Jennifer's science-based and Abuela-approved tools are used by therapists, social workers, and in classrooms across the country. She creates in the Catskill Mountains of New York with her husband Jake and pup Ruthie. For more on her work, visit almadeshop.com and connect with her on Instagram at almadeshop. Join us as she shares how her health led her to discover a side of her heritage language she had yet to uncover and how she plans to bridge generations through her work. Let's get into it.
It is such an honor to have you here today. I have followed your work for a while, and I've been such a fan of the healing that you share with the world through your content and through your products. We're going to get into your work with Almade, but first I want to start with your story. What's been your journey with language and culture, and how has that led you to the work that you do today?
Well, I want to start off by thanking you for inviting me. Vedo, I mentioned before that I'm a big fan of the work that you do with Bilingual Generation, and also a big fan of all the guests you've had on this podcast. It's been so much fun listening to everyone's story, and I can really relate to them in an interesting way. So my name is Jen. I was born and raised in Queens, Jackson Heights, Elmhurst area. And if anyone is familiar with that, those neighborhoods, they are very big immigrant populations there. My family came from Colombia, and being in Jackson Heights in the early 90s felt like being in a town in Colombia, because you could walk a few blocks and there would be five panaderias. You can go to church and get your services in Spanish with a Colombian priest. So it very much felt like home. And I look back, I was so fortunate because Spanish was my native language. That's the language we spoke at home. I guess technically I would be second generation. My parents came here. So I felt very comfortable navigating the world in Spanish. When I started school, it was exclusively English. And over time, that became my dominant language. But still, I felt comfortable traveling back home. It's funny, right? We call it back home. Mm-hmm. I would go back to Colombia and talk with family, and everything was okay. I just felt Colombian first, American second. Mm-hmm. But there was this moment in my mid-20s where, for the longest time, I've struggled with migraines. And mm-hmm. in my mid-20s, I was working my first job out of college. And those sporadic migraines one or two times a week became chronic. And so when someone's diagnosed with chronic migraines, that means they have 15 or more migraine days a month. And that took a huge toll on my mental health. So I had great insurance, and I was able to get an appointment with a neurologist at the Montefiore Headache Center in the Bronx. And this neurologist was a little bit alternative. She had me mm-hmm. going on preventatives, but was also kind of picking up on the way I was talking to her during the intake. And she mentioned, "What seems like you're struggling mentally," which is common when someone has a chronic health condition. Mm-hmm. "And I'm noticing that you're using really disempowering language when you talk about yourself." Wow. And it was true. but I never had anyone call me out on it, much less a doctor. All my doctor interactions in the past had been very hurried. Yeah. And she's like, why don't we try doing affirmations?
Wow.
I had never heard of it. This was many, many years ago, right?
Yeah.
I never heard of an affirmation. It just seemed so woo. But, you know, I don't know if others can relate. Sometimes you reach a point where you're so desperate that you will try anything. So I went home, I Googled a few affirmations, wrote them down, and started repeating them. And I found that it was working. So I wanted to bring my mom in and explain to her what I was doing. I'm working on my mental health. I'm pouring into myself. I'm doing this thing called self-care. And when I went to explain, I literally had no words. I could not describe what I was doing in Spanish. I had no frame of reference because my mother and my family, we'd never had these types of conversations, right? And so I wanted to say things like, okay, I could say self-esteem, that I understood. But self-care, autocuidado, I had never heard that word before, right? Maybe cuidado personales, but it was really hard to explain. And so I saw that barrier, but I knew that in order for me to do my... Because once you get step into this world of wellness, you start unpacking all these things. And, you know, you don't heal alone. You heal in community. You heal in family. And I wanted her to bring her into this. But there was this massive barrier, and it was the language. And so it was around that time that I started just using Google, looking up resources and having these conversations with her. And once we found the words, we were halfway there. Then there was a little bit of the mental stigma and some of the stuff that comes when we're talking to our parents who for the longest have been stuck in survival mode and haven't had like the privilege of time and space and access to resources to think about these big concepts. So I think that was the first time in my mid-20s that I felt like, you know, for the longest time I've said I'm Colombian first, American second, but when it comes to something so important and so meaningful, I can't have this conversation with my mother.
So how did that kind of evolve over the years as you brought her into this? And I love that you mentioned that we don't heal alone, we heal in community, and the intergenerational aspect of that. So can you share a little bit more about like how your relationship devolved and how you were able to get the language in Spanish and bring your culture into it as well?
I started around that time, I started writing my own affirmations and I wanted to bring her into the process. And I was writing them in Spanish with her. I thought that that was a way in. And I remember calling her and saying, hey, I have these affirmations. I just want to translate them into Spanish. And I need you to hear them and tell me what you think. So it was under the pretense. My mom will always show up when it's like, I need you to help me with something, right? But if it's like, hey, show up because I want to have a conversation about our healing and our collective trauma and all, okay, I'm really busy. I can't, I don't have time for this. But mom, can you help me translate something for work? Oh yeah, oh my God, I'll be there. Yeah, I'll be there right away. So we started with something so simple, like I love myself. I remember this so vividly. And I was like, yo me amo, cierto? I love myself, right? And she decided, she said, I think that it's more appropriate to use the word querer. And she said, you can't use amo when it comes to loving yourself. And I'm like, but you can love a husband and you can amar a child y amar a su mamá. Why can't I love myself, use the word amor, which is stronger? I guess in Spanish, there's different ways to say love. That's what's so beautiful about our language, right?
Yeah.
And querer can be used in friendships. It can also be used interchangeably with like or a preference. Yo quiero esto. I want this. Or te quiero. I like you. But I when I mentioned that, I'm like, so why is it not appropriate to say yo me amo? And she stopped and she's like, I guess you could love yourself like that.
Wow.
And she said, I think you're right. You should say, yo me amo, es más fuerte. That's stronger. And these little conversations where I kind of release all expectations because you watch these movies or you hear stories, which I don't think are true, about what healing looks like. And this big aha moment where everyone is super vulnerable and open and ready to do the work. And that's just not our reality. You know, our parents are their own person with their lived experiences and their own trauma. And just because we're ready to do the healing doesn't mean they're there right away. And so I think my approach was just for me to continue to do the work of building my self-worth, of showing her how I set boundaries with work, with other people, and how I love myself and how I talk to myself was an example. So over time, I think it's been 15 years of, you know, me mentioning little things where she makes a mistake. I just suis tan boa. And I'm like, don't say that about yourself because you're not. That was just a mistake. I think I've worn her down and it's just become a habit of her own where she gets it and she's there. But it took years, you know, getting to a place of healing, well-being. It's a long process and there's no end point.
Right. That's so beautiful. And I'm really reflecting on the comment that you said of like, you have to have no expectation around it. Like you can't control the healing process of somebody else or force them into that or anything like that. And I think about kind of my relationship with my parents and my healing process around my language, my culture. I think a lot about, I think it's called Latinx parenting and the concept around chancla culture and like, you know, how
I love her work. Yes,
so important. I think Priscilla, I can't remember her last name, but her work is Latinx parenting. And, you know, when I had my own kid, I really had to, or children now too, had to think about like what I received from my family that I wanted to honor and keep and what I wanted to release. And sometimes like in releasing that, it can seem like a judgment on your parents, right? Like they're like, oh, you're not doing it this way, or you've made this decision. And so it's really important to lean into those boundaries, pero con cariño, with love, like with warmth. I think for me, it's been trying to like keep them in the loop while also and inviting them to participate while also kind of keeping those boundaries around what I do with my kids and how I do it. I don't know if that makes sense.
It totally does. Yeah. And I'm not in that position, but I've heard so many others share that same story because it can seem like it's, like you said, a judgment of them. But I think every generation has to deal with this. And you might have to deal with this in the future with your own kids when, as a society, we all learn more and know better, let's say.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I definitely release myself from that of like the expectation of getting it perfect and that my kids are going to turn out great and they're going to, you know, thank me for everything that I did. Probably they're going to be having their own boundaries and hopefully inviting me into their even, you know, better ways of living and navigating this world than I was able to teach them. And that generational healing, I think, is just a really beautiful thing to lean into. And I feel like that's so embodied in the work that you do with Almade, which the tagline for your work with that company is Wellness con Cultura, which I love. So can you tell me a little bit about why it's important to infuse cultura into wellness? Because wellness for me, like definitely when I was first introduced to it, seemed something that was very much lacking my cultura. It was very much this particular image and way of doing things. I think about like Gwyneth Paltrow and Goop and, you know, all maybe if our culture was in it, it was kind of in an appropriating type of way rather than coming from our ancestral knowledge or recognizing the long history that we have with wellness.
Absolutely. So I love our tagline. I can say that because we recently rebranded. So it all feels very fresh and yeah. New. And that Wellness con Cultura is really, it's our central thesis, right? I think that when I think about everything we do, when we first started, it's exactly as you said, the wellness space was really, it was catering to rich, thin, white women. And it's severely lacked BIPOC representation, especially Latina representation. And I believe that in order for us to meaningfully engage with a product or a tool or a service, that has to be designed with our specific needs in mind. It has to be relevant. It has to feel like it's made for us. And the wellness space was not, right? It was lemon water. And when you said it had any type of culture, it was yoga. It was traditional Chinese medicine. It was, and not in a way where people were honoring the teachers, the ancestors. So we felt like there was a significant gap in products that spoke to our lived experiences, our cultura. The truth is that there's so much medicine in our culture. There's so much wisdom and knowledge that in a way has been lost. And I think that just the process of connecting with our culture is in itself healing. Like, we're so lucky. We're so lucky that we come from such a culture where there's a culture of resilience, a culture of connecting to nature, of knowing how to work with plants, a culture of like understanding how celestial bodies move and how we can connect to those bodies to heal ourselves and to feel like we're part of something bigger than us. And the wellness space was missing all of it. And we wanted to bring it back. For example, I see so much excitement now when it comes to herbalism and working with plants, right? Everyone wants to make their remedios, especially after COVID. People wanted to take ownership of their health and wanted to know how to work with basic plants and treat a basic cold. And when you look at herbalism, there's a lot of what they call folk herbalism, which is European traditions. Maybe they'll take a few traditions from African and Native American herbalism, uncredited, but it feels empty in a way. There's such a rich legacy of herbolaria in our cultura. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's this hunger that we all have to incorporate that into our lives. And so wellness and cultura basically guides every decision we make. It informs every product we design. And we don't want to create products that appeal to the masses. We want to create products that target our community so that they feel that it was made for them and that they own it. And wellness shouldn't be something that's exclusive. It should be a space where everyone belongs, a space that's sacred, that's safe, because when we heal, it can be such a vulnerable process. And pop wellness was the antithesis of all that.
Yes, yes. I mean, I think you're hitting the nail on the head. It's so spot on, because when I see the work that you're doing, when I see the images that you put out, the colors, just, you said you just went through a rebrand. I feel, when I see it as a Latina, I feel seen, I feel celebrated, I feel centered in a way that I don't in other wellness spaces. And I think a lot of my journey in the past many years as an educator and now as a mother has been around centering the needs of others and being a kind of caregiver in so many different ways. But as I've kind of embarked on this journey of healing, it's forced me to pay attention to myself, to pay attention to my wellness. And when I would turn to kind of other resources for doing that, I didn't necessarily feel seen or heard of, like, the specific traumas or journeys or experiences that we've had. And so I think it's really important that we do have something that speaks to us where we can feel like we belong. I'm curious to know, in terms of your images, you're an illustrator too. Mm-hmm. And all of the work that you do kind of speaks so strongly visually to who we are as a culture. Can you tell me a little bit more about, like, why that's important and how people respond to that?
Absolutely. I wanted to go back to something that you said that is so important, and it constantly comes up in my conversation with other Latinas, and it's something that pop wellness misses. It's the community piece. I think that when we listen to pop wellness conversations and we engage in these conversations, it's always a focus on the individual. And of course, we have to pour into ourselves, right? Of course, we have to create these self-care routines just so that we can, that's how we survive, right? You're responsible for this one body and you have to take care of it so that you can show up for others. And I think that the goal for a lot of Latinos is to take care of themselves so that they can then pour out into their communities. Right. You know, right? It's not just about self-actualization. It's about community actualization. And wellness and self-care and self-love allows us to expand our bandwidth so we can pour into others. And I think that's a piece that's missing a lot from popular goopy type companies. Mm-hmm. And the artwork, I mean, I love illustrating, and I really want, when I'm illustrating, I want it to be obviously representative of our customers and the diversity that's part of our culture. And I want to both say something with my words, let's say an affirmation card. I want the affirmation to be powerful, but the image to really drive it home. And I'm someone that feels really moved by beautiful things, whether it's nature or people or a beautiful new piece of artwork or a garment of clothing. I know that if something is beautiful, we want to spend more time with it. Mm-hmm. And so I spend a lot of time on all my illustrations because I just want to feel like you're stepping into a world where you can kind of feel seen, feel light and airy, because it's just this otherworldly magical space. I don't know how else to describe it. Let's just say the artwork is very important, as well as the research back methods and all the research that goes into each of my products.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that comes across very strongly. And I will say, you know, our organization, we actually launched our work with the 6-month community-based design process because we really wanted to understand, you know, the pain points, the resources, the challenges, and the needs in bilingual communities. And we spoke with educators and we spoke with families. And so much of what we heard was a frustration with the lack of high quality, beautiful materials for their kids, learning materials for their kids. Either it was stereotypical, it was not responsive to their culture, or it was just kind of an afterthought. And so I think the types of work that you're putting out into the world is not with our culture or our language as an afterthought, but it's more as the guiding force, as the center of it. And so I really appreciate that. And I know that, you know, a lot of folks who are trying to engage in their own bilingualism or develop their own Spanish or pass that on to their children, because you also have some materials for children too, that it's just something that is centering our identity with a lot of dignity and care and beauty, as you said.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I mean, I think that I'm very lucky that I understand the challenge, because when you're hiring someone else, there's so much time and work that goes into an illustration. Sometimes you have financial constraints. I could spend hours on one card, and that's okay because it's my product, and I'm willing to spend that time on whatever that translates into money on it. Mm-hmm. So I recognize that I'm very lucky.
Yeah, folks should definitely go and check out some of those beautiful affirmation cards. And another thing that you're working on that I'd love to talk more about is your Abuelita's Remedies deck. I'm definitely going to be on the waiting list for when this comes out. It sounds wonderful. I also love the concept of it because, you know, our podcast is called Talking to Grandma. And to me, this is one way of talking to grandmas, to the collective wisdom that's in our community. And so can you share more about this deck and how you created it and why?
Sure. So I'm going to share an anecdote that kind of, I guess, got me thinking about this. I was straight out of college and I was interviewing for my first job. I was very, very anxious. I was so nervous. And I remember I'd called my mom earlier and she said, make sure you have un tecito de manzanilla right before you go in to settle your stomach, to settle your nerves. I'm like, got it. I am in Washington Heights. That's where the office was. And I went into a bodega and I asked for, in that moment, I realized, oh my God, I don't know how to say manzanilla in English. Can I get an apple tea, please? And the guy's like, apple tea. And I'm like, yeah, like for your stomach and stuff. And he's like, I don't think I've heard of apple tea. I don't have it. And I'm like, okay, let me just get a Lipton, which has like caffeine in it. And I walked out and I'm like, this guy doesn't have apple tea manzanilla. I went to the interview. I just, like, days later, I was like, wait, how do you say it? Manzanilla, apple. And I looked it up and I read chamomile. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, I was like, my entire life I've heard of chamomile. I didn't realize when people were talking about chamomile, they were talking about manzanilla. Mm-hmm. And it was a little scary because I've had all these remedies and all these conversations around plants growing up, but they were exclusively in Spanish. And now that as an adult that my dominant language was English, and I didn't even know what these plants were called in English, I felt like I was at risk of losing all that knowledge. Okay, so kept that in the back of my mind. And years later, during COVID, my mom was in the first wave of people that got sick. During her recovery, she was drinking lots of teas and making her infusiones. And I shared with a friend, like, yeah, my mom's been drinking agua de perejil and doing all these things. And she's like, how does she know what to do? I'm like, I don't know. She just does. It's just part of our culture. Yeah. And I realized that I had taken that knowledge for granted. And I had also taken access to that knowledge, my mom, my family, for granted, because they're not going to be here forever. So I decided to call her up one day, months later, like, I want to write down all your remedies. What are your go-tos? And she's like, you know what? You should call your aunt because she's the one that knows. You know, 10 minutes later, I have blocks and blocks of WhatsApp messages from her that I have to scroll through because she's just has so much knowledge. And I thought, I'm gonna write these down in like a journal and have them for myself. You know, from talking to people, they're like, can you share that document with me? Share that Google Doc. And I'm like, I need to gather more information. So just from word of mouth over the last 3 years, I've been connected to people's aunts, you know, talked to my mother-in-law in Mexico. She really helped me when I was giving birth and postpartum care. Talked to my mom in La República Dominicana. She has lots of knowledge and keeps a garden. I spoke to someone's grandma in Chile. I spoke to someone's friend and coworker in Ecuador. So I was having all these phone conversations asking these women, which are like the plant knowledge keepers in their family, what were their go-to remedies? What were their favorite plants to work with? What wild herbs did they like to use? And I've been documenting that over the last 3 years and finally decided to narrow that down and create a deck featuring 30 plants and all the different ways that abuelitas, tías, primas use them across Latin America. It's a way for us to kind of a tool for preserving our culture and that knowledge. And I'm wrapping that up and it'll be released this spring.
That's amazing. Okay, so everybody, you heard it here. Keep your eye out for Abuelita's deck. And it sounds really great to get those remedios. ¿Así se dice remedios?
Remedios. Sí.
Okay, I'm doubting myself as soon as
No.
I was like, okay. Yeah. So Jen, I mean, I love hearing about all of the work that you're doing around our culture, our healing, and hearing your journey of like how you got here from that doctor's office and the migraines and the chronic illness around that. I kind of want to circle back a little bit to hear about that process in terms of any mindset shifts that you had. And let me provide a little bit of framing around this. A lot of our listeners are bilingual educators or parents that are trying to raise their children bilingually or caregivers. And a lot of what we recognize for heritage language speakers is that we're going against the grain and doing this work and raising our children multilingually in a monolingual world, in a world that kind of values and a lot of times forces assimilation onto people. And so when we want to change that narrative or we want to change that direction, it can be difficult and require some mindset shifts. So I'd love to hear from you as you started to make that shift and go in a different direction. What types of changes in your thinking or in your approach did you need to adopt? And was it easy to do? Did you come across any challenges?
I think I mentioned something before, and it was about releasing expectations. And I want to go back to that because when it comes to, let's say, for example, having a big shift, improving your mental health, having this massive explosion in your self-love and your self-worth. We know what the end goal looks like, but if we obsess over that, it can feel impossible. And I think that releasing expectations and instead pouring your energy on showing up every day is usually the answer. And focus on what you can control, which is that one habit. Let's say, I always think about it when it comes to someone that wants to get fit, All right. And they want to get fit, whatever that looks like for them. If they're obsessing over the number on the scale, it can be so challenging. But instead, they focus on what they can control, which is, let's say, a 20-minute walk every day. Doesn't matter what the outcome of that walk looks like. You just know that you clocked in those, you know, that time and you clocked in that walk and you're done. You succeeded. And I think the same goes for things like healing, the work that you're doing. I tried my best. Today I showed up. And that takes a lot of pressure off of us because there's only so much that we can control. And for me, something like, you know, I still don't feel great. I'm still really having trouble, like lots of trouble getting out of bed. But I know this morning I recited a few affirmations. I journaled and I called a friend. I did what I could for my mental health. And if you keep doing that over time, you'll see the results. Yeah. So I think that's the only advice that I can give because, yeah, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves and we can only control so much.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so beautiful. And I think it goes back to also the collective healing that you mentioned, that, you know, how we approach this culturally. And I think about often how I want this healing not to be done also just for myself, but for the next generation and for the people around me. And that it's so important that I can model that or that I can kind of contribute that energy to the space that I'm in as well. I think that's beautiful that you recognize and name that because sometimes in wellness, you know, when even the term like self-care, it can seem so like self-centered, which is good. You should focus on yourself, but it's really hard for me to disconnect my individual well-being from the well-being of the people around me or the people that I care about.
Yeah. And it's a good reminder, right, to realize that, and you know it, and I think we all know it deep down, that if we're not caring for ourselves, then who is? Mm-hmm. And how will you show up for these people if you're stressed and overwhelmed and potentially taking out your anger and frustration on them, and then you're not happy? And that's not sustainable. Yeah. And so I think self-care has been so conflated and like the term has been used to sell so many different products and all marketing that it's kind of really gotten away from its true meaning, which is, you know, what are the activities and habits that contribute to your well-being as a human? Mm-hmm. And when we look at it that way, it's simple things like a nourishing meal once a day at least. A nice shower where we have a minute to like just sink and breathe and you really strip it down. And the goal with self-care is to have the energy and, like I said, the bandwidth to show up for our community, for causes, to get out there, right? And you can't do that when you're completely depleted.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. I hope everybody is tuning into that message because it's such an important one. And you know, when we work with families and we work with educators, we have a full unit of study around self-care because, and it's often shocking when they're like, you know, we're in a professional development about bilingual education. Why are we talking about self-care? Because it's critical to being able to show up to do the work that is really difficult, hard, taxing work, but made easier once if we are taking care of our health and our well-being in that way. So thank you again for elevating that.
I also want to mention that, you know, when you have like these feelings, check them and try to understand where they're coming from. I have an affirmation that I like to recite a few times, which is that I embrace rest in all its forms and I release all guilt about taking time for myself. Because I know that growing up, when I was just sitting around, I would be made to feel guilty and shamed for just being perezosa. Right?
Yes, yes.
And so check those feelings. And just because our parents potentially had anxiety and didn't know how to sit still or couldn't sit still because they were always busy, it didn't mean that that was doing the most for their well-being. And now we know better, so we should do better.
Oh, wow. Jen, okay, so you named something very specific that I probably wasn't sure where that came from before, but also flashback to my childhood when I would feel the anxiety of my mom, you know, coming in the room or coming home, and I'm like, have I Have I
Look
done
busy.
enough?
Start
Am
doing
I
homework.
looking at the, do have I done all my chores? Have I yeah.
I mean, I do it with my husband sometimes. Like, oh, I don't want him to catch me on my phone. Let me go do something. I'm like, no, I already did all my work. I can just lounge around now.
Or yeah, even if you haven't done all your work and you need some rest right now,
so I can do my work later. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I love that. I love that affirmation. Can I ask you to share another one or two affirmations that really kind of ground you or are guiding you these days?
I have some that I've written down. My affirmation deck is also being updated and it's going to be released in the summer. So it's very exciting. Here, let's talk about boundary setting. Okay. This is a little bit long, but we can sit with it. Yes. I can deeply care about and show gratitude to loved ones and still say no. I set healthy boundaries that protect me. And so you want to repeat that a few times, especially if you're struggling to say no to family. Boundaries don't exist in your family. You're made to feel guilty when you ask for space. This is a reminder. Let's do a Spanish one. Soy la raíz sobre la que otros crecerán y darán frutos. Cuando reconozco mi poder, toda mi comunidad gana.
Eso.
For those that don't speak Spanish, we can say, I am the foundation others will build on. When I choose to walk in my power, my whole community wins.
Yes. Whoa, thank you for sharing those affirmations. I know I needed to hear them. I'm sure many of our listeners are appreciating those words. And just the power of words, I'm brought back to that. So
That's
thank
right.
you so much, Jen, for sharing that. It's been such a joy to have you on the podcast. I really appreciate sharing this space and hearing more about your story and your work. As we close out, I'd love to hear about what's bringing you joy these days.
That's a really easy answer. You caught me recording my dog playing outside, and I'm going to say it's my new puppy, Ruthie. She is just so fun, and she gets me outside, and I mean, she's just brought us so much happiness, and she's just a bundle of joy. I love her so much.
Yeah. Oh, thanks so much for sharing that. In about 15 minutes, a friend is going to come with a dog that we sit every once in a while. So I appreciate that we can also kind of get that energy and animal kind of spirit and vibe into our house as well, even though we're not full-time pet owners. Yeah, they really are. They really are. So thank you so much, Jen, for sharing your joy with us, for sharing your story with us, for sharing your healing with us. Where can folks learn more about your work and kind of follow all of the amazing work that you're doing?
I would say the best place would be to visit my website, almadeshop.com, and sign up for my newsletter. And that's where I share updates, and you'll be the first to know about the new decks that are coming this year. And if you are into Instagram, if you're still using it, you can find me on almadeshop as well.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Jen.
Thank you, Vero.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. If you liked what you heard, take a minute to share this podcast with a friend or colleague. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast platform. Your ratings and reviews help us to keep the podcast lights on. We can't do this without your support. Every subscription, share, follow, download, and review makes a big difference and helps others find our show. Also, we love hearing from you. Tell us what you think of the podcast. Email us at hello@bilingualgeneration.com. You can also slide into our DMs on Instagram @talkingtograndma. If you are interested in learning more about our workshops and curricular tools for schools serving multilingual and emerging multilingual students, visit our website at www.bilingualgeneration.com or write us at hello@bilingualgeneration.com. Talking to Grandma is owned by Bilingual Generation. Rebecca De Leon is our editor and producer. The artwork for Talking to Grandma was created by Nancy Guevara, and I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides. See you next episode.